time to start the FTN show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Bell of Lost Souls podcast. This is episode 172. And man, I got so much stuff I want to talk about this episode. I'm joined tonight by Adam Abramowitz and Andrew Whitaker.
What's up, gamers?
What up, homies?
And Chris Morgan.
I'm just here to make sure Paul doesn't get to talk about everything.
there's almost too much to fit in one show. I mean, I know, you know, we're trying to cram in as much content as we can this month to, you know, give folks some hobby stuff to listen to and some extra stuff to do. But this show is going to be bustling, absolutely bustling with content. I want to start right off. I finally got to watch HBO. Has seriously been jacking around with me. I don't know if it's HBO or some kind of Comcast conspiracy.
Among other things.
I don't know if it was just the way the DVR Comcast recorded, but it left off the last 3 minutes of Westworld, so I had to like go back into demand, and then like fast forward the whole thing, and anyway. Took me like three times to get it to where I needed it to be right there to watch the last 3 minutes of Westworld. And I was pretty, I mean, no spoilers, but I think it was a really solid series.
You know what, Paul? So like, I was talking to my wife about it. My wife and I, we don't often like the same televised entertainment. This is one of those shows where we absolutely both love watching it. And
because I still think there's some things in the story that we're supposed to try to be piecing together and stuff. It was good. It was done really, really well. It didn't go that, you know, Lost route or whatever. It was just a well done, really solid series. Really, really glad that I did watch it. And, you know, again, this whole debacle of trying to watch the last couple of minutes. The last couple of minutes, very satisfying. You know, it kind of brings everything, you know, kind of full circle around, which is really nice. Anyway, you get that satisfaction.
From what I understand, then, I mean, it's already picked up for a second season, right?
It is. It is picked up for a second season. But it won't be 2018 is when it will be released. So that's a long time to go while we're pondering all the stuff. Maybe they do something in between. Who knows? Whatever.
I have not watched a single episode of it yet. But hats off to basically everyone who's watched the show. Nothing has been spoiled yet. But I've heard nothing but rave reviews. I'm a I follow two blogs very, very closely during my working hours when I'm not working. But one of them described the show in an interesting way. And Paul, I think you can maybe confirm or deny this for me. But they said that it was the most satisfying season conclusion that they had ever watched on television. Not because it was the greatest show on television, although it may be in that conversation, but because it tied up every plot arc. It tied up every loose end. Yeah, there might have been a couple of open questions left, but basically everybody said that there were no cliffhangers. There was no, where is the smoke coming from? Why is there a polar bear on the island? You know, which of these four people on there are going to die via baseball bat? There was no any of those giant cliffhangers. There was very much like all these loose ends are more or less tied up. And this is how the series or the season ended, such that if it was a series ender, fans would be satisfied. And I really like that. So I've heard nothing but rave reviews, and I can't wait to watch it.
I think that's very, very accurate. Very accurate. Like, you could burn a Saturday just watching half the season and then pick them up the next day, and you will not feel like it's wasted time. This show is obviously about miniature games, not about TV, but I wanted to share that. You know, because like it's like kind of everything, the collective consciousness of the media or whatever. And we talked before about, you know, Mindworm Games and their Exiles game, which is not, it's not robots, but it's definitely tied into that kind of Weird West stuff. So if that's got you, your appetite kind of hankering for that type of game or that type of environment to play in, I think checking out that Mindworm Games product, you know, big contributors to Warzone, also is worth it. It's worth doing while, I guess, while you're kind of in that mode.
So I think going to their website, period, is just worth a few minutes, because it's the writing in the website and the copy that they have on the website is hilarious. Very funny. It's a very different approach to selling a product. And, you know, Benson, who's one of the owners at Mindworm Games, I found out, I met him at Warzone a couple weeks ago. He lives like 10 miles away from me. And I mean, Paul, you explained to me, like, he's basically taught, he's self-trained everything. He makes all of the models. He does a lot of the printing there, and has assembled this really incredible team of people to tell this story with this tabletop game. It's a tabletop role-playing game, right, Paul?
It's a strategy role-playing game. There's a couple of different ways I think you can approach the whole experience depending on what you're into. You can run either kind of one-offs or campaigns. It's fun. It's worth checking out. And if I can, I'm going to change gears a bit to actually talk about the Kitbash crew too. We started this group on Facebook called the Kitbash crew, KITBASHCREW. And got a lot of people in it right now, a decent amount of people anyway in it. And I was looking for a particular bit. I told you there's a lot of jam in this episode. Looking for a particular bit, an open-handed, like, finger and palm for a Terminator specifically. I needed a left-hand? Yeah, I needed a left-hand or right, whichever one doesn't come on the Green Knights. I think it was I needed a right-hand open palm Terminator hand. And people share their work in there all the time. It's great for inspiration, and that's why I started, just to kind of get the – because, again, I'm not a converter. I'm a Kitbasher, so I like to see what other bits other people are using so I can do it. And, like, 15 people responded with where they thought this hand might exist, and I was able to track one down. So that's the internet, people. Pretty happy with that.
Behold the power of gaming groups. Like, I really like what Kitbash crew puts out. Yeah, so you guys know that I'm starting a Lamenters project, and I have a bunch of models laying around with some bits laying around my table, and I figured I'd put together a Sanguinary Priest, even though he's probably not going to be in my list. But Paul says I need one, and Andrew says that I need one, and those two guys are the 40K gods, so I have to listen to them. And I picked up some bits from Blood Angels tactical kit. And, there's some apothecary bits from a Terminator squad. Paul doesn't necessarily like my choice of using a Terminator apothecary arm, but
dude, I believe really they hit it harder when you use Terminator arms. I'm all about it. It's fine.
I agree 100%.
Paul had your back. I was the one who said it's his strong hand.
Yeah, so. You need a big hand to get in there and pull out that gene seed. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. But there's so much inspiration out there. For those of you all that have a bunch of bits at home, go to the Facebook page, ask to join, log in, whatever. Check it out once a day, because people are constantly posting cool bits, man.
It's really fun to see. Okay, now
there's some really creative people.
Yeah, I can't hold it back anymore. We absolutely have to talk about chaos. In this episode, after the break, I want to talk about, like, maybe some gift guides. You know, we're kind of in that kind of gifting season. So maybe after the second part of the episode, you might want to let your significant others or people that might be getting gifts for you listen to, if there's something that we cover on there. So that's what we'll do after the break, and then we'll do the finishing move segment. And this time we're going to be talking about leather, specifically like pouches or wraps or whatever on a figure. I think that's something that kind of it's like one of those details that is sometimes you just get lost or whatever. We're going to talk about how to bring them out, and I think it's going to be a good segment. But before any of that, we have to talk about Chaos Trader Legions.
Wait, why do we want to talk about Chaos Trader Legions? I mean,
exciting going on with Chaos, Paul.
Aren't Chaos Space Marines the forgotten? Like, they're the forgotten fans. Like, they don't get anything. They've never gotten anything.
GW is doing everything they possibly can to not release a new Chaos Space Marine Codex. You know, and we predicted this for a long time on the show, that we're not going to get a bunch of brand new codexes. We're going to get updates and supplements and things that modify or maybe replace a page or two here and there. And I'm absolutely fine with that. You know, you look at it and you think, just from a user point of view, like, how could they possibly make all this work? And how could they justify Chaos? Chaos is such a terrible codex. We're never going to see another Chaos Space Marine again. And then they release the Wrath of Magnus and Traitor Legions. And if I could just do a quick just pause here to talk about Magnus. We cover this. Andrew and I do a player spotlight interview this week, and I don't know when we're going to release it, but we talk about building Magnus, and not enough people are leaving his chest plate armor off. He looks like a straight up pro wrestler when you leave his top armor off.
Yeah, that he is cut.
And I think that more people should watch that.
Like Duncan's painting video. Like, I like it. The model's so much cooler without that chest piece with the horns on.
You know, it's funny. I we must be looking at different media outlets, Paul, because I have noticed, I would say probably two out of every three models I've seen posted on social media or whatever have been without the chest armor.
I think they intend.
I think that people are realizing.
I've seen.
Maybe that's true. Maybe it's going to be magnetized. I was just going to say that, I mean, I much prefer the no armor. I think the horn chest
I'm using the term chest because I don't know if I could say nipples in the car.
What are you going to do when Magnus runs wild all over you? That's all I want to know.
I'm gonna laugh at some clown playing 650 points of unoptimized demons. That's what I'm going to laugh at. But mostly, I'm going to laugh at his horn chesticles. And it's just, they're awful. It's just awful.
So where I was going, I know I took us on a sidetrack, but we got Wrath of Magnus. And then coming around the back of that is Traitor Legions. And there's, you know, you can check out Battle of Lost Souls. I actually put up an article on ForgeNarrative.net today, too, about the Death Guard. I've got an article. By the time you hear this, their article will probably be out on Bulls talking about Iron Warriors. And this codex and the detachments, the actual legion rules, each individual legion, and then what their Decurion detachment is. You know what I'm talking about when I say Decurion style. Their detachment of detachments. Push rules for the random old Chaos Space Marine, the garbage, the trash units that you would never take in Codex Chaos Space Marines are now a very, very viable choice. I know this bears some explanation, but I want to get you guys' initial thoughts.
This is the game changer that Chaos Space Marine players have wanted. I believe that this is the thing that is going to take Chaos Space Marines and bring them to the level that they should be at. It was basically you get new free formations and you get new free special rules without a point
tactic.
Increase.
I mean, you know, this is it's
then
like
you get
a chapter
tactic, yes.
But it's just like a chapter tactic plus. A lot of these chapter tactics are like multi-rule, like four rule type things.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, because you don't get the price decrease that the other, you know, they're trying to bring them in line with regular Marines. And I think that was accomplished. You know, if the rumors are true, and again, I reserve final judgment until I have the book in my hand, but it looks very much like this was a huge step towards leveling the playing field.
So I have one thing to say. Terminators with a rerollable reroll ones on a 3-up in bull save. Is that a thing?
Yes, it is. That's a Wrath of Magnus formation, although it's very pricey to get that.
Oh, it's not Traitor Legions.
But it's Cataphracty armor. Well, anyway, sorry.
No, it's all right. So every legion, just base legion, you can declare for a particular legion, and then you get a set of rules as long as you meet the restrictions. And the restrictions are pretty easy to meet. A lot of them are just simply don't take a name character that's not from your legion. I mean, that's pretty much it.
It kind of feels like we're talking about Horus Heresy right now.
These rules are kind of...
The Legion.
These are the antagonists of that story,
and they're 10,000 years in the future. And this allows you, like when Chaos Space Marine Codex was released, I fully believe the Games Workshop wanted us to believe like this was the rabble. These were not 10,000-year-old Space Marines. These were just people that happened to have some Chaos Space Marine armor and they're mutated. You know, this is just the chafe that you're going to find out there in the universe of some Marine protagonist.
They were punk rock Space Marines.
Sorry, antagonist.
And then, right.
These guys are the 10,000-year-old Marines. These are the legions that have existed through time that are the big bad guys in the universe. And I'll tell you why they're pushed that way. So you devote to a legion, and then you've got to meet your restrictions, which are, along the lines of don't take any name characters, don't take any marks that aren't associated with your legion. So not difficult to maintain. Like those things aren't it. Do it. And then you get rules, like we can talk about Death Guard here for a minute. They are crazy strong, if you ask me. Every model that can have Veteran of the Long War special rule, you have to get it, but you get it for free. So right there, that puts them more in line with their Marine cousins. The Death Guard then go on to get Fearless and Feel No Pain, and then Relentless. Like, I don't know.
And that's for every model that has the Veterans of the Long War, right?
So, and now, and I.
So you don't even have to have Plague Marines.
No.
To have Feel No Pain.
No, you get to buy a regular old, 15, 16 point Chaos Space Marine. May even be cheaper. I don't know. And he gets all these rules. He gives up an initiative.
Poor man's Death Company.
Yeah. You lose a point of initiative. That's another one of the restrictions for those rules. But I will trade that for all these rules any day. I'd put this on a Blood Angel. I'd put it on anything. Like, I'd love it. That package of rules is amazing. And that's, I'm just talking about the death card. There, you know, imagine a similar pack. Now, obviously not all as effective, but a similar package of rules on every Marine in your army. And it took, I had to do a double take. I'm doing some analysis, you know, looking over anytime there's a release, I implore everyone to go back and look at how it affects existing things. So this had me looking all over the Chaos Space Marine Codex. I had forgotten that obliterators can take the veteran upgrade.
Well, what good does that give them exactly?
Well, toughness five, feel no pain,
it
right?
It gives them feel no pain. Yeah, it gives them fearless and feel no pain, I see, which I think they might be fearless already, but it gives them the feel no pain. So that's just the Legion rules. But this is talking, you put it on Havocs, you put it on regular Chaos Space Marines. You could, you know, make a case for Chosen and Terminators at this point. But let me get to that in just a second. So if you take, you can also take Plague Marines as troops. I don't even know why you'd want to do that, though. Maybe I'm missing something, but I'm talking about for overall optimization.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there may be some builds as kind of things flush out, but yeah, the answer is you just take regular Chaos troops, Chaos Marines as troops, right? Yeah. Is that what you were saying?
Or yeah, you take the regular old Chaos Space Marines.
Yeah, yep. Okay.
Yep, yep. So you go on, and then you take, if you want to take the Death Guard Legion Decurion, I think it's called the Vectorium or something similar, this is when it just gets just bonkers, just real bonkers. You can reroll your Warlord trait, which, you know, whatever. You can reroll Feel No Pain rolls of a one.
That is so hot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and maybe so that's where the Plague Marines come in handy. You know, the higher toughness and the and then the reroll and the feel no pain of the one that, you know, that creates some magnitude multiplier of survivability and your units. This is all units that have the veteran and the long war get stealth if they are targeted by a unit 18 inches or more away. That's not turn one.
Yes.
That's all the time. That's cloud of flies. If you're shooting these things from over 18 inches away, they have stealth.
That is very hot, especially with the proliferation of ruins and the new capacity to purchase a ruin if you want it
for 20 points. And that Haematrope, I talk about this a lot in the Iron Wars article at least, but that Haematrope reactor. I mean,
ooh, yeah. That's a good, good.
I mean, this, like, you're going to see some Iron Warriors builds probably with three of them all spread out. So
you're absolutely.
You're facing down 50 plasma blast on turn one, maybe. I mean, I don't know, whatever. So some obscene number.
Right. Some number of manipulable spamming list that's going to compete with their Imperial counterparts to win games.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It's just options. Just options now.
On durable units, like in the in the Iron Warriors, you can take obliterators as troops.
That's right.
Like I think that's awesome. But that may be because that's what actually made me panic, because I'm like, do they even get veteran upgrade? Because this is all for veteran upgrades. Oh, thank goodness. It was a 3-point upgrade before, but now it's free. Appreciate it. Thanks, GW. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Penny saved is a penny earned.
Hey, you got to, in this world we play in, at least on the competitive side, everything that you can eke out, you know, it puts you more in pair, you know, on par. Maybe, and anyway, I haven't pointed it all out, but maybe there's enough veterans that give you almost a Warcon point. I don't know.
Almost one Warcon.
Well, I mean, the freeness of the Warcon stuff.
Right.
So I really love it when the fluff pairs with impressive rules, because you read about some of these things and it's like they do this, they've shrugged off this, they're able to endure this, and then it just doesn't play out on the tabletop. So you're kind of left with that, you know, I don't know, kind of bait and switch feeling. But this has every single bit of that squeezed into these rules. And I love it.
Yeah, I think it's
flavorful, right? It's thematic and it's effective.
Yes, absolutely.
There's no doubt about that. I was most excited about Black Legion for all the same reasons that Paul was just excited about the Death Guard and the Iron Warriors that he previously mentioned. I thought the Black Legion one was the one that came out with the most glaringly, oh my goodness, look at how beat stick these rules are type rule set. But the fact that, you know, competitive players can look at this release, you know, so far we just have the rumors, but if we can look at this release and say to ourselves, you know, holy crap, I think this is the best one. And no, he thinks that's the best one. And we can all create arguments for why it is the best one. That is huge, and it's awesome, and it's something the Chaos Space Marines has never had in the whole time that I've been playing this little silly game. So I'm very excited about it.
This is the phrase that I've not uttered in almost a decade, it feels. I think I might need more Chaos Space Marines.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've never wanted to build Chaos to be competitive before this week. And now when I'm thinking to myself, wait, I can assault at a deep strike turn one with Black Legion Raptor Wing? What? That's wild. That is wild.
If we want to do a quick case study, in the past week, and I'm talking actually less than a week, since Friday of last week, I've had four different people email me to paint them a Chaos Space Marines army. I mean, that's like, I never get four emails a week for commissions, and I got four emails this week purely on Chaos Space Marines.
That's awesome, man. Yep. The basis of all these Decurion-style detachments is the Chaos Warband formation. And I'm going to read off a list of mandatory requirements that before this book, you would have just, I wouldn't be able to talk because you'd all be laughing. All right. Formation is one mandatory Chaos Lord. There's a 0-1 sorcerer choice. 1-3 units of chosen terminators or possessed. These are mandatory. 1-3. 2-6 units of Chaos Space Marines. 1-3 units of Raptors, Warp Talons, or Bikers. And 1-3 Havocs or Hellbrutes. The special rules for this are you get to roll twice on the Chaos Boon table and take one or both of the results. That's underrated, by the way. I think that is can be good. It doesn't come up. It's hard to equip someone that finds himself to be in a situation where they can roll twice. But let's say that it applies to your gift of mutation that you take on your Chaos Lord to the 10-point upgrade. That's the Chaos Boon table that you roll on, right? So, and then all of these units become objective secure. So all this trash
of money.
Yeah. So tooling this up, like, and this is taken somewhere on the lines of, you know, I'm speaking specifically, you know, for Death Guard, you'd have some different things for your Legion and stuff, but that's the basis for all of them. So all of them had this warband you've got to satisfy if you go with the Decurion side of things, at least that's how we understand it right now. So you've got the Chaos Lord on a bike, all the trappings, Power Fist, Lightning Claw, Mark of Nurgle, Gift of Mutation, Sigil of Corruption, a couple of Terminator squads, a couple of Space Marine, Chaos Space Marines with plasma guns, a six-man unit of bikers. Here's what I did here that you put your bike lord in, so then you got seven, so then you're kind of being a little fluffy, right? You know, for Nurgle.
Naturally.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. And then I see you.
And then three Havoc squads with four autocannons in them. Now, I know we may want to talk about like some shenanigans you can do with rhinos on these with the Havocs. And I don't want to steal your thunder, Andrew. I think you have some great points that we talked about in the pre-show. But this is just base. So just doing like some quick math here, this comes in under 1,200 points, some, you know, give or take. And that gives you...
Well under.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're really splurging on stuff, you should be well under 1,200 points.
You know, this has got an extra unit in here for the Terminators, and then, I mean, but you're okay, yeah. You could satisfy in a six-man unit of bikes that are kind of tooled up a little bit, you know. Anyway, you can play with it. So you're looking somewhere south of what we consider kind of a the bulk of your army, but still a nice chunk, but it's an effective chunk because all the special rules that you get, and then you've still got 600 plus points to spend, almost 700, maybe 800 points to spend on whatever else you want to do. A Sorcerer's Cabal, the Helldrake Terror Pack that we talk about, you know, all this kind of stuff that you can, you still got a bunch of points left over comparatively. It's Chaos, so points get kind of tight, but you've got a chunk of points left over after you satisfied this stuff. And then your tax is not even a tax because it's all OPSEC and has, you know, great rules on top of it.
Yep. Definitely. Definitely worthwhile. I mean, I think that it's one of those things. All of the things in the warband are. It mirrors closely the Demi Company, the Battle Demi Company, right? What I think is fun about the warband is that it is less restrictive than the Demi Company. It allows you to put the points where
absolutely
you want them. And as such, and I because it's more flexible in terms of where you put the points and which units you take. For example, you can take. And correct me if I'm wrong, Paul. You can take a unit of raptors or a Helldrake or a, you know, there's multiple fast attack options. As opposed to in the Demon Company,
it's one you're to three raptors, warp talons, or bikers. You don't get the Helldrakes or stuff.
There you go. So you, yeah, okay, perfect. But then, but the Helldrake is another option, right? You get for in terms of the is that not
an option? Not in the warband. It is not an option in the warband.
Not in the warband. It's for it's. I'm sorry, I think of another one of the formations. In any case, so in the Demon Company, you're bringing in an assault squad. Full stop. Period. In the Chaos Warband, well, maybe the bikes are what you want to do. You're running Death Guard. Yeah, bikes are probably the better option because now they're cruising around a T6 potentially. If you're running, say, for example, Night Lords, maybe the Raptors are the ones you want to bring, et cetera, et cetera. So it lends itself well to the flexibility matching the chapter tactics of the army you're bringing, right? If you're playing Imperial Fists, it is just bonkers that you're going to have an assault squad with jump packs. That's just not the list type that you want to bring. I dare say that 95% of all Imperial Fist players on this entire planet of Earth don't have two assault squads painted prior to the Gladius coming out. And so I think the Chaos lends itself, it's much more advantageous for a more flexible build to match your army type, to match with your chapter tactics. And here's why that's most important to me from a competitive standpoint. I think that 60% of a game of 40K happens before the game starts. It's a list design, list building a game.
Wait, if 55% of Warhammer is trash talking, then we're already up to, what is that?
100? Oh, yeah, that's 105%. You're not wrong. Okay, so 55 trash talk. Of the remaining 45%.
Minus the three.
But my point is that if you have a list design in mind using any one of these Traitor Legion chapter tactics, the Warband opens the doors for you to optimize the chapter tactic you've chosen.
Yeah, there's play here. There's play here for sure.
There's play here, and play here is so important. By way of example, we talked about this pre-show, the Death Guard. Death Guard don't want to have anybody with it. They don't need Raptors. Raptors are not their go-to option. They don't need jump pack dudes or assault squads. They're trying to take advantage of relentlessness and high toughness. And OBSEC and stealth, well, let me play through that. Relentlessness, OBSEC, stealth, and high toughness. All of those things play themselves very well together with Havocs, right? You've got heavy weapons teams that are well protected by cover and high toughness. Well, that's wonderful. And now they can move and shoot. And in the Warband, you can now take three squads of Havocs. We did the math before the show. A five-man squad of Havocs in the Warband with the Traitor Legion chapter tactics is 120 points.
Yeah, 120. So you slap on a
120-ish. You slap on a 40-point Rhino with a Dozer Blade, you're looking at 160 points.
Or a Dirge for caster, a unit. A Dirge caster on those Rhinos, too, for maybe to back
not
up.
To be overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, just throwing it out there. I want to cover as much as we can.
For sure. And the point there is that you can now move and shoot and be safe with squads of heavy weapons. So it doubles their effectiveness. Not only are their objectives secured and controlling the objectives that are the whole point of the game, but they're also these big, strong, heavy weapon squads that are, you know, three units of Havocs with missile launchers. It'll take a couple of turns, probably two full turns to kill that Wraith Knight. Like that's not something that an Eldar player can afford to overlook.
Yeah,
and it's very reasonable for the Chaos Space Marine player. That is just one small example of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and they're think moving, of how brutal that is. You know, we know that the scatter lasers are very punishing to volume. You know, there's a lot of volume of fire, and there's other things on the list is volume of fire, and it just wears you down. But if you're playing a formation that has a 3+ save, a feel no pain, and then rerolling ones on a feel no pain, I mean, you're not going to take it. And you're fearless, too. You're not going to remove the combat power of this unit on turn one.
Nope. They're
and they shall know no fearless.
Yeah, exactly. They're three up saves with feel no pain, rerolling ones, and then they're returning fire on those scat bikes with, you know, relentless missile launchers.
I think in a situation like that, it really messes with your target priority. Again, from a competitive point of view, when you have a unit that can score but can also put out a crap ton of damage, if you're not watching it, then you have to deal with it. But you're not just talking about one unit. This isn't one Wraith Knight on the table. This is multiples.
No, this is three Havoc squads. This is not even 500 points. You know, maybe with the Rhinos, but
right.
Yeah, it's
tough. Exactly. This. Is there any combination of the chaos buffs or anything that provides interceptor or bonuses to Overwatch?
I haven't seen any of that yet, at least not the intercept. And there sounds like there probably should be something for Overwatch, but I don't think that there is.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is because one more thing that this does is create those Alpha Strike armies. Like it creates a benefit to having those.
Man, good luck digging out chaos with Alpha Strike.
I mean, I can see a Golden Host, for example, ripping apart three units of Havocs in one round. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
There's.
But what are they missing, though? They've also overkill.
And that's also a little bit necessary, right? I mean, because you've got, especially if you're doing these Nurgle guys, right? Even with the power weapons that come on the Sanguinary Guard or you know whatever, unless they're Thunder Hammer, Storm Shield, Terminators, they're still getting a feel no pain from that. Like there's so even for Alpha Strike army,
not a better than anything, but they're getting an improved feel no pain against most conventional weaponry.
Right. So I look at this and I think that's a good balancing move.
Yeah.
And you're not going to sweep them.
And I know we're talking a lot about a Nurgle, but I did write that article today. It's up on SinforgeNarrative.net. But many of the legions have this type of flavor to it. And, you know, and what Andrew was just talking about with scooting around and the humble Rhino. Now, you've got to pay for them in this formation. But firing heavy weapons out of the back of a Rhino with relentless troops and then relentless durable troops, it really messes with the momentum of what your opponent might just not be able to build up the appropriate amount of steam to beat you in a regular 5-6 round game.
Yeah, I don't think that. You know, I was a harsh critic of the Wrath of Magnus release. I didn't think it was competitive. It was fun and it was good. The models look great, but it wasn't good. This is very much a different feel. My cold read on this is that it's going to be a meta changer in much the same way that Gene Stealer Cult is going to be a meta changer. If you guys listen to the incoming player spotlight with Horton Doughton, you'll hear Paul mention that once Gene Stealer Cult ramps up and starts to see widespread build and play, the competitive meta is going to shift to adapt to their presence. I think that the introduction of Chaos Chapter Tactics is going to do exactly that same thing. There's just no way that a standard Tau build, you know, is going to be able to survive or going to exist in its current edifice, at least. Is going to exist when a Black Legion Chaos Space Marine player can show up with a couple of Raptor Talons, Deep Strike on turn one, and assault everything out of reserve. That's just not, you know, like, if that becomes a thing, and there's no reason why it shouldn't.
I feel like some of those Forge World drop pods that Chaos can get might be able to take a Dirge Caster also.
Right, so exactly. So now you're like, even if, yeah.
Denies Overwatch.
Now they're now, I mean, that's, now the Tau aren't going to Overwatch.
That silence is Andrew's brain adapting and processing information.
Like, yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm a huge null deploy guy. I believe in null deployment. That is, I think it's one of the most underutilized tactics in the game.
It's difficult to pull off. We should probably devote a whole episode on just. I mean, it's not going to be a very exciting episode, but that's one. It's a difficult tactic.
About as exciting as the first turn for your opponent.
No, I shouldn't talk about it because that's my new trick coming next year, and I don't want anybody to know about it. Yeah, exactly. Maybe when if ever I get my own player spotlight, we can talk about it. But I. Like, it's so powerful. And when I read that Black Legion rule, I was like, so my warlord can guarantee entry on turn one. He and his squad guarantees entry turn one. I have a massive number of available formations. And my deep striking reserves can roll starting on turn one. That is so strong. And I was like, why
is it taking them 13 crusades to figure it out? That's what I want to know.
Exactly. But like, who needs it? I mean, now I'm not going to say who needs a drop pod. God forbid I ever say those words ever come out of my mouth. But Chaos Space Marines don't necessarily need a drop pod anymore because they can just roll. And there's a plenty of reserve manipulation in the Chaos Space Marine Codex, whether it's just bringing a comms relay or even bringing Helldrakes with the
a Death from the Sky formation, so you're plus two to reserves. There's plenty of ways to get your stuff in on the turns that you want them. Very strong. And that's just off the top of my head. That was the first thing that entered my mind. I have yet to really pore over all the Night Lord options.
I don't want to give the idea. I don't want to give the idea that this is all optimized. Yeah. It's one for all the Lost Legions, I say the Fallen Legions, except the Dark Angels. Gotcha. You know, they get their own rules, but yeah.
isn't Cypher their Fallen Legion formation?
Yes. But I was referring to the whole chapter.
yes, I know. I was just trying to, you know, rub some salt in that wound.
So I don't want to indicate that this is optimized. This is us looking at, oh, you know, the content that we have so far that's been out there and interpreted by other folks, and then coming up with just an explanation on why this is good. And it's so nice to be able to talk about the Chaos Space Marines at the big boy table.
If people are whining, complaining about Chaos Space Marines not getting anything right now, then they just, I'm sorry, they're just whiners.
You can't please everybody.
Well, you can't please everybody, but at this point, if you are still complaining about Chaos Space Marines, you've lost argumentative credibility.
I mentioned it a few minutes ago, but I got to even credit the designers. I did not think there was a conceivable way to make me feel good about putting Chaos Space Marines, just the actual Chaos Space Marine, the humble, you know, troop choice guy on the table again.
Yeah. No, I think they've done it 100%. Absolutely, yeah. They have. And they did it in a very elegant way. They didn't have to come out with a whole brand new codex and repoint everything. They didn't come out with some FAQ that repoints things or gives new options or change weapons profiles. They've simply added rules and flexibility and formations based on those original rules. So
they didn't invalidate, really, like Crimson Slaughter, still legal. I mean, there's nothing that's been invalidated. This is just added to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if it's as good as I think it can be, it's going to be game changing. And in a way that offsets the power builds right now. You know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, if we're going to kind of bore down into it just for a second, again, with the tactics, there are certain very high end, top of the list armies, right? You know, the raw efficiency of Eldar, the overwhelming shooting capacity of Tau, the summoning capacity of demons, all of those things lend themselves to exploitation by the top end players. This CSM release has the exact same amount of temptation. I don't think that, there is going to be, and I don't mean this to insult Eldar players, but the mindlessness of Eldar, and by that I mean it's so obviously good.
It's hard to make a bad choice in list design with Eldar.
Exactly. And there are going to be obvious choices in this CSM release that are akin to what the Eldar have. And because of that, you're going to see power gamers and those kind of upper mid-tier power players who want to strive to do good things and come up with creative new list ideas. Their interest is going to be piqued, and Chaos Space Marines is going to get the attention, the list design attention that it so desperately needs and deserves.
I would argue, Andrew, that it's
already happening. Like, if you are on any of the pages on Facebook, like, the top tier players are already saying, is this legal? Can I do this? What do you think? Like, it's already there.
If you guys out there have any, like, sweet Legion builds, please share it with us on our Facebook page. I'm not going to get tired of looking about this. I know that we're not going to be, like, going over every Legion every episode, but we're definitely going to continue to talk about Chaos because it's incredibly relevant.
It's also
relevant
fun,
is
right?
Definitely the word I would use for it, and that's the word people need to start associating with Chaos more now more than ever. And I think that it's an encouraging sign for the things that are to come for every army. Imagine, right? All of these people for the last year that this has been in development have said, gosh, GW, why don't you come out with Legion rules? Like, and how they must have been chuckling at us, being frustrated at that, thinking, you're all right. You guys are all right. It's the same thing you do to kids at Christmas time. It's just like, when do I get open? I want this for Christmas. Oh, no one's going to get this. Tell me you got this. And you're just like, You'll see.
Oh, it's coming.
We're going to take a break and come back. We'll talk about some of those kind of gift ideas. I mean, it's hard to shop for gamers. Like, how do you, like, it just really is. Because you know, our whims and needs change at the drop of a hat. But I think there's some things out there that kind of are and I don't want to just coin the phrase, but kind of good for the dude, your gamer has everything. And we'll talk about that a little bit, and then we'll get into the finishing moves. See you guys in a minute.
Cheers.
Forged Narrative is brought to you by Dicehead.com. www.dicehead.com. Games, hob supplies, and comics. They have it all.
Hey everybody, we are back. I'm still TPM. I got Andrew Whitaker and Adam Abramowitz.
What up, guys? What up?
And Chris Morgan.
Hey.
We talked about just a little bit before we took the break is like gift. I mean, what do you get a gamer who has, I don't want to say necessarily has everything, but maybe just the mind's desire changes that he's built. Most gamers, at least us, maybe listen to the show. You know, I've already built like 5 lists just sitting in traffic today. So what I need for miniatures changes almost on a minute by minute. Like there's no consistency. We often just harvest like Games Workshop's box games for figs. You know, things like the Calf and the Prospero box and, you know, any of those starter sets and stuff, you know, we just like, you know what, that's like half an army. Let me go ahead and get a couple of those, please. And then never play the game inside. Although I hear that Calf is really good and worth playing.
That's how it was a Space Hulk. I bought the original Space Hulk and I've never played it. I've only ever played. Fun. I mean, I just bought the miniatures so that I have Blood Angels Terminators.
Yeah, it's fun. There's a lot of devotees of that game out there that, I mean, just love all the sets. They devote weekends to it. It's, I mean, the same way you do the other. It's fun. But, you know, that's not exactly what I'm talking about. Blood Bowl just got re-released recently. And this is one of those things to where if you don't, even if you have the old set, you want to kind of splurge on a gift or whatever, Blood Bowl is one of those things you do. It's completely self-contained. You get 2 teams in the main box set. So Paul, it's $100.
Paul, before we, can we explain to them what Blood Bowl is?
Blood Bowl is a game of football loosely set in the Warhammer fantasy realm, designed by British folks who play football differently than we do. But it's American football.
Played on a pitch. It's a hybridized American football
and egg
rugby and, you know, conceptualized by British people, by British game designers who aren't adhering strictly to the line of scrimmage style football, set in kind of a
it's like a Age parallel dimension style. To the Age of Sigmar.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you like the aesthetic of 2 teams on a field, it's really fun.
But they're wearing football gear. It's not like they're wearing it. They are wearing pads and helmets.
It's not wearing armor and swords.
But there's orcs, there's humans, there's other races. All of the races, for the most part, that we've come to know and love from Age of Sigmar.
Yes, go and look at the site, at the Games Workshop site, and look at the miniatures. I think when I tell you what I'm going to tell you, you might be impressed. They are 3-part, pretty much snap-together miniatures. So they go together very fast. I put together 2 teams, I want to say, in maybe under an hour. So where I'm going with that,
I mean, that's not a lot of time.
No, where I'm going with that is that it's easy to get up and going. Like you could take it out of, and the rule book's not very weighty either. You could take it out of the box, get moving. And this is one of the self-contained Games Workshop games, like all in one box, that is incredibly worth it. It has great value with the figures that you get and the tokens and the pieces and stuff. And there's not a ton. It's not like you're not going to be punching out tokens forever. You're going to be able to get up and moving pretty fast with the game. And so that's why I made it on this list of things that, you know, if someone doesn't already have this game, or maybe they've got a set from 10 years ago or whatever, this is something that's would be pretty spectacular.
I will say it too, in kind of in reference to what Paul said earlier about when you're sitting in traffic or have a break at work or your day off or something like that, when you're just daydreaming, you list design, you think about your games and you think about what you want to play next and what you're painting right now. And those, the models that you want kind of float here and there, and it's hard to put your finger on it. And I know that for my family, my brothers, my parents, my fiance, whoever it is, it's very hard to explain to them Oh yeah, you know what I really need is another box of tactical marines. I need a Devastator squad and then a Stern Guard squad, but not because I want those squads, is because I need the special weapons inside them. Like it's nonsense to try and explain that to them, and it's something that you can buy yourself just as readily, very often. Blood Bowl is not like that.
You know, it's like going to Target.
I really want this box game set. It's a great way to support your friendly local game store. Send them a link to, you know, whatever, you know, if you don't have a local game store, you can send them a link to Dicehead Games, always offering
pretty sure
big discounts.
Pretty sure Dicehead sells this, yep.
GW stuff. Absolutely. And be like, hey, I want this. And then you can say, it's a board game that is like Warhammer and made by the same company, but it's a full-blown board game about football. You know, my dad, who is not a gamer at all, if I said, hey, man, come play this game with me, he would actually sit down and try and learn it. And the rules are simplistic enough. It's not 40K. It's very approachable. For the non-gamer, it's the perfect gift to the gamer for something that we all want and we could buy ourselves, but it's very approachable for the gift giver. I know I've put it on my list for sure. And there's a lot of stuff like that that I think is helpful. You know, I've wanted Imperial Knight Acheron for a really long time, but I just can't bring myself to ask.
Sweet.
Yeah, Paul has one.
I love
it. It looks great. It's garbage on the table, but it's great.
I think it's great all around.
I think you're wrong, but it's great. You know, like I love it.
That's the beauty of this. That's the beauty of gamers. But what we're talking about specifically, is these box sets and the game. The Blood Bowl game has a lot of organic back and forth. Like even could somebody could be really good at the game, you could be playing a novice, and you're still going to have a pretty even game most of the time. And I like that. I like that there's some back and forth. You could sit down. You could just take the teams out of the box, play it. Put the teams right back in the box and move on with your lives. The next time you sit down, you switch. One guy plays the other team, you play the other team, and it's, you know, you're getting a really cool experience out of it. And or you could get all into it and get all the teams. Like, I can't wait till the next team comes out. I want to know what next team's hitting the shelves. I want a Wood Elf team. I want an Undead team, you know, because it's all based off the fantasy races. But right now,
I think we should do Fantasy Blood Bowl. I mean, that should be the new thing, and base it all off of Paul's games.
Yeah, I'll get them all. We'll put out one of those Yahoo groups going or whatever. And
actually, that's a Andrew's the betting man in this group.
Yahoo's still a thing.
Andrew, how can we make that happen? That we get everybody pulled up for Paul's weekly Blood Bowl games, and we create fantasy teams.
Some type of rotisserie draft or something.
You can if you convince Caesar's Palace to set lines on Paul's games, I'll bet them 1,000%.
The subject of this is all about like just cool gifts you can get. So things along that line, even it might maybe not be Blood Bowl, but a self-contained game. Like you guys, episodes ago, I'm a big fan of that Tokaido game. Which is, it's on just at the surface level, it is incredibly casual. You're playing, your characters are traveling across Japan, and you're doing, every one of your characters has a certain interest. So along the road, traveling from one end of Japan to the other, you're doing things. You could be painting a picture. You could be interested in checking out the hot springs. You could be somebody who just wants to experience all the food. So everything I'm talking about, you're basically doing a tourist thing, but there's a really complex element of strategy that's woven into this. So you could play a cutthroat game of this and not even, and you don't get those feel bad feelings. So any kind of self-contained strategy game where you're moving kind of miniature like things around, that's perfectly in line for folks like us, I think.
So I, you know, me as a, I'm a tough buy as a hobbyist because I do two things. I paint and I play 40K. Like, I'm very interested in checking out our friends at Mind Warriors Games, Exile Games, because it sounds fun, and we talked about it earlier in the show. But, Paul, like, what are some gifts for people that like to paint?
They'd like to paint? Well, things
they're hobbyists.
I can tell you my, and I've said this before, but my hobby area looks like a flaming garbage heap. It's like a tire fire. It's probably the best
word. He was just extolling Nurgle to everybody, so I guess it makes sense.
And yeah, I'm exaggerating a bit, but like I lose things on my desk when I'm sitting there. Like I haven't moved for an hour because I'm painting and I can't find what I just sat down. That's how bad it is. So maybe things like a storage rack for paints are some of those like hobby desk. Like, I know that, Impudent Mortal, one of the sponsors of Warzone has...
They were at ATC.
And they've got things like paint racks, and I was looking at, like, it came through my... You know how Facebook just shows you things that we believe you want to see this, you know, and it showed me one of their previous Kickstarters that had a terrain set that instead of you painting it, it came with adhesive decals, almost like a wrap for the scenery, and it looks good. Like, go to the Impudent Mortal site and look for their Rust futuristic, like, Wasteland, I think is what it's called, and it looks really good. It's not available for sale yet, because I was like, immediately was like, well, how can I get my hands on some of this? But they wrapped up their Kickstarter, and it will be on for sale, I think, after the first of the year. But they've also got things like a paint rack, I don't know. We'll talk. I think storage is a good thing. Let's talk about like storage for things, because that is right in the wheelhouse of most gamers I know.
Well, we talked about a little bit before this episode started about kind of what we would like. You know, Adam was like, paint storage, whatever. Infinite Immortal makes, and I bought some of this at Warzone. They have a great paint rack. It's almost fit together laser cut wood. That kind of assembles very, very simply. And it's a great organization space. I was catching a lot of heat from my lady because she was not happy with what a wrecked pile of just nonsense garbage my painting station was. And so when I came home and assembled these paint racks and put all of my paint into them, she actually complimented me. It was like, hey, that actually looks presentable in the guest room on the desk. She's like, I want to kill you less than normal. And that felt really good. And so, huge fan of that. Impudent Mortal has a lot of great stuff, more than just the terrain that Paul was talking about. Oh, absolutely. I literally texted my mom and was like, hey, let me tell you how great my day was. Emily doesn't want to kill me as badly. But speaking of storage, we also talk about, you know, no matter how many models you have, and I know for me, I have requested this year and forevermore, I can never get enough model storage. And for that, there's only one game in town for me, and that's Army Transport. They were sponsored Warzone, but this isn't just a giant ad. We're not trying to plug stuff that we don't actually use. And you could talk to pretty much anybody.
Yeah. So go. Yeah. If you have a brand you like and you want to get something for somebody of our kind, then storage is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the, like, again, this harkens back to like, I can't just ask for models. I'm not going to ask my mom for a Devastator squad. No, that's not what I'm kind of in the position to ask for, but I can send her a link to the Army Transport and say, hey, look, check out these cool bags. That's an approachable thing for a non-gamer to wrap their brain around. Storage, an individual board game like Blood Bowl, a painting rack from Impudent Mortal, whatever it is, those things are very approachable for a non-gamer to understand, more so than just a model kit. And Army Transport is the best. The pluckable foam is one of those things where, you know, if you have an oddly shaped model, big conversions, and if you go into my closet, I've got the Army Transport bags, and the majority of the time, the bags sit empty, and I just pull and swap out the foam, and the foam is stacked 3, 4, 5 feet up in the air.
There's a lot of truth to that, because I was just at Andrew's apartment, and it was like when you're a kid and you go over to somebody's house for a sleepover for the first time, and they're like, let me bring out all my toys to show you.
Yeah,
that's exactly what Andrew did.
That's exactly right. And Adam sat on my couch, and I was like, check these out. And I pulled out foam, tray after tray after tray of foam, and I still need more. And every single time I build a new model, it's like I need to go buy more foam, get another bag, etc. It's one of those things, very inexpensive. I think Army Transport offers some discounts to Forged Narrative listeners. They're a big Warzone contributor as well. And that also, ultimately, I do want to mention this. You know, no matter what you do, make or however you spend your hobby dollars, especially during the holidays, make sure you support the people and companies that support you and your hobbies.
Yeah,
it is so important. The things that you like, make sure that those dollars make it back. Everyone should be very candid about the fact that a company is going to support an event or us, right? So if you like listening to Forge the Narrative, well, you know that Army Transport sponsors Forge the Narrative. And so you're going to buy an Army Transport. You're going to buy some kind of model transport system one way or the other. So you might as well support the people who support the things you like. If you hate us, fine. Don't go, you know, don't support the things we like.
Please don't hate us. But you should still support the
Please don't hate us. Yes. If you're still listening to at minute 49 of this episode, you probably don't hate us, but I'll just say, you know, be intentional about what you ask for and what you buy, especially during the holidays, because it really does help. And all of these companies, whether it's Game Mad EU, whether it's Impudent Mortal, whether it's Army Transport, or they're your friendly local gaming store, all of them are small businesses, and they all, you know, contribute to the community, and they need you to buy stuff there. Well, so it's
the reality helping everybody. Of the storage thing is that I don't know a single gamer who buys storage at the same rate that he buys figures. Like, yeah, everyone always needs more storage. And so that's
it took my dad 30 years to get most of his stuff in boxes.
When I first got back into the hobby, you know, my wife never knows what to get me for Christmas. You know, the things that I'm into are things that I'm actively involved with, and that's bicycles and 40K. For a year and a half, and even beyond that, I would go to tournaments with my army in a cardboard box. And she got me 1 year for Christmas, and it was a total surprise. And she went to the local game store and said, I don't know what models he wants. I don't know what paints he wants. What can I get him that is something that he needs? And they said, does he have a transport case? And she said, no. And that's what she got me. And I was totally shocked. And it was such a great gift.
There you go. A real life example of exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The season that, you know, at least most places kind of some giving stuff. And I know we're talking about some items, but it really is difficult to shop for gamers. And so, you know, whatever, if we can help a little bit, these are some things I do. So I guess the takeaway is, you know, some kind of self-contained board game that still kind of scratches that itch for moving pieces around a board or a table or whatever. And everybody needs storage all day long. And those are good things. And then, you know, sprucing up your tabletop with scenery. I mean, that's something that I don't know a lot of gamers who really have just a solid full table's worth of scenery. And I think everyone would appreciate some variety on playing on their tabletop. So anyway, let us know what you guys think. You guys have any more ideas about that kind of stuff? I'd love to hear about it because, look, I'll be honest, you know, I'm a consumer of gaming stuff. So, you know, maybe there's some stuff out there I don't know about.
Actually, hit us up on the Twitter and the Face pages.
Let's talk about the Finish Your Move segment. Finish Your Move segment this week is sponsored by Game Mat EU. You know, we've talked about them before, and I believe in what they've got. Like, their ruins stuff is just straight out of the box, line of sight blocking stuff, a functional, efficient terrain, doesn't break the bank, you know, speaking in line with terrain stuff. And so and their mats are good. You know, again, it's just they're offering a real good quality service. And if you've seen our pictures and seen pictures from our big tournaments and our personal gaming tables, you'll know it works. I mean, it does what you need it to do. It looks good. It blocks line of sight. And, you know, it's a functional piece of terrain. And I definitely, if you haven't checked them out already, please do check them out. This Finish Your Move segment is going to be about a leather. This could be a book. It could be pouches. The non-armor, non-cloth type stuff on a model. And, you know, I'll be honest, I've been painting some of those Blood Bowl figures we were talking about earlier, and things like the Skaven have, like, leather armbands, gloves, and stuff. Even the Custodes from the new box set have a leather gauntlet on them, and you want a different texture to those type of things than you have on the rest of the model. You're not going to necessarily just edge highlighted or dry brush it. You want it to look different and distinct on the model. And I think it's easy to lose that perspective after you've already got finished with a model. So as in line with the Finish and Move segment, this is about spending 5 or 10 more minutes on a model to really make it distinctive and look good on the tabletop.
Yeah, I think that the because leather, or is that what we're going to call it? Let's define our terms for the night. You know, leather is kind of the browns, the whether it's the book or
I think
boots
we stick
on
with
your
leather.
Guardsmen, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think we stick with the
leather. I think leather
or
is
pleather,
the term.
Depending on how classy your guardsmen are.
Just some, so people understand what we're talking Naga about. When we say leather, we're not necessarily talking about one particular item. You know, leather-bound book or boots or whatever.
The tassels of the Space Marine loincloth, you know, the pouches that you
non-armor bits.
Ridiculously decided to glue onto your Space Marine or Guardsman. The wrappings coming off like a Skaven's ankle or whatever with some kind of throwing star attached to it. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes. So, and for me, I think that color should be, at least when you start basing it, that color should be very, it should be dark, and it should be dark brown, because when you highlight up or when you dry brush up or layer paint up, you want to be coming from a pretty dark set. And so for me, that is Snakebite leather. Which I guess is now called Balor Brown. Is that right? Balor?
I'm a Rhinox hide myself.
You're a Rhinox guy? Okay, that's fair. For me, it's Snakebite leather. And
or
then
Dryad Bark. I don't know. Is that a thing? Which one? I don't know which one's a still current line paint.
I think so. Rhinox is like the darkest, and that one's almost, it's like a drab, almost a gray green. It's so dark. It's very dark.
Yeah. And also, let me say, I'm not good at this. So you guys may have more insight than me. So I do not. This segment is for me. So I'll shut up a little bit.
I think leather comes in three different very distinct colors. And I think where Andrew's leading us down is kind of the brownish tannish leather. Leather is also a deep red, and leather is also a black.
Well, I think that, you know, kind of building on what Adam's point is, the color choice for whatever pouches you're doing is very important in relation to the model. And you don't necessarily have to adhere to the idea that there's only like three or four colors of leather. I think, like for me, for example, I have brown desert style bases. So having a brown leather or even a red leather on my Blood Angels doesn't make a lot of sense. But black leather tends to kind of get lost in the model. So it kind of depends on what you want to do. But always consider the colors, the rest of your model, how much you want these things to stand out. I often end up using like a yellowish brown, something that's a little bit more, it still has color, it still pops a bit, but it doesn't look like I just rub dirt all over my pouches to make them match.
So would you go up to like, it's called like a bubonic brown, was the old color, I don't know what it is now.
So I use XV88 for pouches.
I think that's the bubonic,
which is a highlight on top of, yeah, which is on top of the Mournfang brown, I believe is what it is. And then I'll usually do a very, very light highlight of maybe one part white, two parts XV88 to just kind of go over the edges and bring those out a little bit. And then always remember, if there is a button showing, put that little metallic dot on the button, on the latch, on the clasp, whatever it is. Adding those little details really helps with the immersion of that.
Yeah, I think that that's funny you mentioned the yellowish brown. There are, so XV88 tends to be a little bit, again, that's kind of dark. But it's certainly a good base color to start. And no, there's no doubt that the rest of the color of your model is going to matter the most. But the classic brown leather is what most people are drawn to. And just from a technical standpoint, I think that, you know, you pick your base color. For me, it's that Snakebite leather or whatever it's called now. Check the GW transfer chart. XV88 is a good one because it's a little bit lighter. I think Rhinox hide is too dark to start from, but that's, you know, that's a personal preference. And then from there, I think you hit it with a layer color up from that. So for example, if you start from the Snakebite leather, then you can layer up to a Talarn sand or a Karak stone, which is the old Commando khaki color. And then those two combine to create a nice, very authentic looking, kind of a rich layered brown. And then you hit it with an Agthrax wash. And then your final highlight. It's four steps, very simple. And really that you can go from, leather doesn't necessarily need a really strong edge highlight. So if you want to skip that and just do a simple dry brush or just leave it at the, at the layer with the wash by itself, you know, it just kind of depends on how much time you want to put into it. It's not overly difficult, but it can help at times, I think, to set apart a tabletop quality miniature from something less than that.
And in line with the dark edge highlights, we're shading with a black, like a null oil, or I mean, what are we shading?
Go ahead, Andrew. I was going to say I shade with Agbrex just because it gives you an additional brown. When it hits those recesses, I don't think substantively you get anything different from a null oil because it's dark on dark in those recesses. But where it finally dries over the top of your layer color, it doesn't turn it black. It just kind of mutes or shifts the brown color, which is really what you want, because no leather looks the same. I have a watch, for example, that has a leather strap on it. And if you just look at the watch band, every bit of the watch band looks like a slightly different color brown, because when leather bends, it marks, it scuffs, there's cuts in the watch band, there's all those different kind of organic blemishes on the leather itself should look different. And so you need to have – it goes brown on top of brown with a brown wash and a brown dry brush and a brown highlight. And all of those things, as long as they're different, will meld to look really, really nice.
When I paint leather and it's distinctly leather, I paint in a slightly different way. I'm okay with seeing brush strokes when I paint leather, because leather has texture to it and it has a very unique texture to it.
So texture is a big thing here, because we talked about the kind of the preface of this is that it should have a different texture than the armor around it or the cloak around it or whatever.
Right. And what I do is and this goes back to art school back when I was a kid. And if anybody took an art class, they probably learned about crosshatching. And you can do that and work your way up with crosshatching. And all crosshatching is you take the traditional edge highlight that GW tells you. It doesn't need an edge highlight. What you're doing is you're, as opposed to wet blending it or blending it up, you are just crosshatching over the edges. And you're essentially taking that edge and at a 45 degree angle, drawing tiny little lines and highlighting up. And then you alternate and draw those lines in the opposite direction. So you crisscross your way up to the color that you want. But my biggest takeaway from painting any type of leather, whether you're doing red, whether you're doing brown or black, is work your crosshatch, work your highlight in, wash afterwards. We're trained so often, GW does a great way, and it's a very effective way to get models painted. But sometimes a better effect is a slightly different approach. They train you to put your base color down, add your layer, wash it, and then work your layers back up. When you're doing leather, and much like we talked about the tabards earlier, sometimes it's more effective to put your wash on afterwards. And I think I totally agree.
Great point. I failed to mention it beforehand. If you like you said, crosshatch or highlight, and then conclude with the final wash, it really absolutely looks great. There's a reason why I pay Adam every month, because that's 1,000% a great point.
This is one of those things to where it's a small detail. I mean, there are pouches on or some type of element of this, whether it be on, you know, a librarian's book that could be on and strapped to his hip, or again the tassels coming off a wrist or boot or whatever, or the pouches. Like, I never glue pouches on guardsmen, but sometimes, you know, they just happen to somehow jump on there, and you got to paint it.
Yeah. Well, it's also important to realize that sometimes it's not a small bit where you're doing, I can think of, you know, most frequently what comes to my mind is in on demon type models or monstrous creatures, where you can very often see big chunks of leather or huge pouches. For example, one of the GW Demon Prince kits has basically like a big satchel kind of laying off the side of the Demon Prince. You know, these tiny techniques that we're talking about when applied to a small leather patch or a boot or something can, if you get good at them, or rather need to be practiced before you can start painting those bigger models, where they're much more pronounced. And
well, you're trying to paint Magnus's championship belt. You're going to need to really work on some pouches. That's absolutely true.
And one more thing about doing some of the leathers, and this is a trick that I discovered lately, had to do with doing the black leathers. there's always that gloss, that shine effect that you see on leather or pleather that kind of adds that sort of texture. I found that using a, like if you do a progressive highlight of grays on top of a black and then use the Drakenhof Nightshade wash, that leaves a little bit of that glossy look to the blacks that can, it still has some color depth to it, but at the same time, it kind of also gets that sort of sheen to it.
Interesting. That's a cool take. I will say too, bear in mind that if you're going to do something, you might not have to glue pouches onto your Space Marines or glue satchels onto your Guardsmen. If you're doing one of those older retro Imperial Guard armies, with their old metal models.
Talking about the Vestroians.
Low key, you don't, yeah, Vestroians. Yeah, that's just my personal hell. But, you know, the Catechins, you're not gluing bits on. They just come with it. Vestroians are the same way. A lot of the old metal models, there's just a ton of extra detail. And if you want to have those great, aesthetically awesome armies, you got to get good at these small techniques, or the final product isn't going to look the way you want.
Yeah, like even like the Catechins, for instance, I learned to paint bandanas. Essentially, I got really good at painting, making distinctive looking bandanas. And because they were just, you know, you couldn't get them off the model.
Yes. And that's, I mean, exactly. There's so many, there are pouches on pouches on pouches of Vestroian. So I got very, very good at three layers of brown and a wash. And we could do an entire finishing moves on how to paint tiny little mustaches. But that would really only be applicable.
You mentioned something earlier, the replacement for Commando Khaki. I mean, I think we got a couple of topics lined up for the coming weeks. I definitely want to do hair, like actual hair on like full heads of hair that come on all these, you know, like the other Marines, like the Blood Angels have hair. And then, you know, they're making some now, the Space Wolves and hair. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about, hair, like actual full head of hair. Yep. And then you also mentioned that the replacement for Commando Khaki, so I think we should discuss like traditional camouflage, like how that straight out of the Cadian type camouflage that you put on vehicles. So, you know, there's I think what I consider some challenging but fun things to do, again, that make those miniatures pop. So we got plenty more of these topics coming up, and this has been a fun segment to do, so I'm glad we're keeping it going. We've talked a lot. I told you this is going to be a jam-packed episode, and it is. We're coming into the holiday season. That's why we're talking about the gift-giving guide, essentially. And heck, even if you were looking for something to grab for yourself while you're out there doing stuff for everybody else, consider the things we just talked about. Anyway, nobody ever has enough of that, the stuff we're talked about. And then, man, chaos. Finally,
so we got something. Much of it.
This a bunch of meaty stuff. Going to be busy with fantasizing about chaos lists for quite some time.
I have a feeling we're going to be talking about chaos for a few weeks more. Yeah. Chaos is going to be a recurring theme on this show.
How to do it and how to beat it.
Let's be real. Hanging out with a bunch of traitors.
Some of those are just misunderstood.
Yeah.
The victims of circumstance.
They're all a bunch of middle school boys. Just victims of circumstance.
Well, thank y'all for talking to me tonight. Thank you guys for listening. We got some more bonus content coming out. Probably at least a couple of those before the end of the year. See you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Have a good night.
I see dead people.